Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, I talk with illustrator, designer, and all-around shape warlock, Daniel Hare. Daniel works for Nooklyn, an app for finding apartments and roommates in major metropolitan areas. We sit down and talk about work, growing up feeling like an outsider, balancing having a day job with freelance, and pushing your limits in a good way, all right after this. Do you ever wonder if there are other people who love spreading misery and raining on people's parades? If you have, you're a jackass. Sorry, but you're the worst. That's not what City Luck Fortune Cookies are about. They aim to spread a little sarcasm and fun in the darkest places in this world. If you're reminded that life is a series of unrelated, strange events that sometimes involve cats, that's not their fault. City Luck Fortune Cookies are the perfect gift for when you need to add a little cynicism to your friend's day, burst the bubble of your jerk coworker, or just share a little dark humor with your best friend. City Luck Fortune Cookies are handcrafted by Zach and Beth, who have way too much time and felt on their hands. Visit cityluck.xyz to buy a 3-pack that you can send to your friends, enemies, or try to collect all the fortunes yourself. And while you're there, pick up one of the City Luck Cat enamel pins and our promo code FAMILY to get 30% off your first order. Always weird, but never mean-spirited. City Luck Fortune Cookies. Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Then head over to creativesouth.com right now and get your Creative South tickets. Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. Plus, when you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you could even get your own podcast episode. So please, help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. No, yeah, that's perfectly fine. So I'm going to put down my nerdy homemade soundbox real quick. So if I go black for like 2 seconds.
Nice.
Yeah, there
we go. It's actually a pretty cool setup.
Well, it saved me, let's see, what I spent like $15 on that versus going out and spending $500 on what's essentially the same thing.
Yeah, so, that stuff gets super expensive. My fiance, she does voice recording stuff.
Oh, does she?
Sometimes, yeah, and she usually goes out to her car and records because it's a lot quieter out there than it is in the apartment. But she considered like building one of those. Yeah, definitely handy though.
Now, are you still in Atlanta, or have you? Because I knew you're moving to Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. I am Brooklyn bound. We're heading out on Halloween, actually.
You still got a few weeks to pack.
Yeah. I said that we're going to go as movers as our Halloween costumes, so it'll be kind of fitting. I'm sure we'll dress those up a little bit. But yeah, I'm still in Atlanta for now. But yeah, we've got one more month.
Cool. So where are you going to be working at now?
So I am going to be working at a company called Nooklyn.
Okay.
It's a lot of things. It's mainly an apartment finding app for people that are either already in Brooklyn or people who are thinking about moving to Brooklyn, and it makes the process a lot easier because moving to New York City, just from personal experience, is a hellish process. It's overwhelming. It's crazy.
I can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, you just have like such a huge concentration of apartments everywhere, and you know, there are so many neighborhoods. Some neighborhoods are good, some neighborhoods are bad, some neighborhoods are filled with bars. So you really want to like find the right one and find something that's fitting for you, for your lifestyle and your personality.
Sure.
And that's where Nooklyn comes in. They do a really good job of like putting together neighborhood guides and making the whole process really just as seamless as possible. So
more places need an app like that.
They really do. Yeah. I mean, Nooklyn, we're in San Francisco, but plan on moving to LA, Austin, Miami. And, I believe those are like the, the top cities right now that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So I think even Portland was thrown out. Just like cities that, you know, they're kind of hip. People want to move there. Definitely like millennials
who are
100% our users. Like, I think people from the age of 22 to 34, like that's
right.
That makes up like a ton of our users. So yeah, it was really interesting actually being a user of the app that I helped build in the past.
I get to beta test your own thing.
yeah. And like, you really get to use it, you know, it's not just for like, you know, not just doing it kind of mindlessly, like, okay, well, this thing goes here, this stuff seems to make sense. But apps that I've worked for in the past, I used, mm-hmm. but I wasn't like a daily user by any means. But with Nooklyn, like, I've been working for them on and off for the past 3 years.
Oh, okay. Have you been doing like a bunch of freelance? Because you were at Yik Yak for a while, right?
Yeah. I was with Yik Yak for a little over a year, but I've been doing stuff for Nooklyn for almost 3 years now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they contacted me about 3 years ago for just some little illustrations for the homepage.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned into another project. That turned into another project. And we just kind of formed a good relationship where it was a very lax freelance gig that, like, the CTO there, Moyes, awesome guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's never like any timelines on anything. It's just kind of like at my own pace, and you know, things are really easy in that regard. And there wasn't like a lot of direction on what to do, which sometimes is great, especially when it comes to illustrations, because mm-hmm. I've had some freelance gigs where the brief for a single spot illustration is 3 pages long. I'm like, all right, we're going. I'm kind of going overboard with this.
I'm doing a freelance project that's overflow for a buddy right now. And the information, I wish I'd gotten a 3-page brief, because I literally got the directions where, you know, we kind of want like a flyer, but not really a flyer. But it's going to be cool. So if you could give us some options.
Like, yeah, that's totally enough information to go off of.
So do you have, like, pictures, copy, anything?
Right, any tone, some colors, really just any more information than that. Yeah. That's helpful. That is helpful.
Yeah.
But, like, with Nooklyn, it was always this really cool, like, I'd work my full-time gig and, you know, come home and work on Nooklyn stuff, but it was kind of like, it was very relaxing, mm-hmm. almost, because it was stuff that it's not like the things that I worked on at my day job or things that I didn't want to work on, because I really did. I mean, I'm extremely passionate about design, and if I wasn't a designer, I'd be laying in a ditch somewhere because I'm useless in every other area.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
That's so definitely holding on to this career path for as long as possible.
I'd probably be like a short order cook at Waffle House, because I think that's probably about the only other skill set that I have.
You know, and that's probably like the best people watching position to be in.
Well, the problem is, though, if you're a short order cook, you're facing the opposite way.
Oh, that's true. So you just have to like kind of turn your head over every 15 minutes like clockwork just to see if someone drunk and entertaining is coming.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're definitely not sober enough to know the other way. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, I just learned that Waffle Houses are also fallout shelters.
What?
So yeah, they're fallout shelters. So like, in fact, there is a scale, and I don't quote me on this. Like, I don't know where it is exactly, but I read a few different things about this, that they rate natural disasters mm-hmm. and whether a Waffle House is open or not. So just sounds insane, but, and there was the town that I grew up in, Ringgold, Georgia. It got hit with a really bad tornado a few years ago and mm-hmm. pretty much demolished the whole city, which is horrible. But like, Waffle House is one of the things that was open, and that's how they knew that, like, okay, like, people have a place to go. They have a place to eat. You know, they're able to knock out food very quickly at Waffle Houses.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. Just one of those things. Just mind blown. Yeah. Mind blown.
I had never thought of that.
Waffle House is where you want to be. Like, when You're in the end of days.
So all the people on the east coast of Florida need to start checking out their Waffle Houses right now.
They probably just need to go pitch some tents in the dining room there. Definitely hang out there. Yeah.
Sadly, there has probably been someone who has literally set up a tent inside of a Waffle House before.
You know, I can see it in my mind's eye now, and good for them. Good for them. Yeah, can't go wrong with a Waffle House.
So. Yeah. Yeah, that's not somewhere I want to spend more than the 30 minutes that I normally spend in there.
Probably not, no.
And if you're realizing that when you're drunk, just imagine how bad it is when you're sober.
Yeah, definitely a dismal situation for sure. Actually, as sad as it sounds, so my first Creative South that I went to, I was staying in like some junky hotel because I kind of committed to the ticket last minute. And, you know, I got there and across the street there's the Waffle House. And I don't know what I was doing that night, but I got home really late. It was like 3 a.m. and I was starving. And I went over to the Waffle House because it was either that or McDonald's. And Waffle House, the clear winner. So I went in and I was literally the only person sitting there in a booth by myself. And it was really peaceful. Like, it was like, oh, this is like my personal dining room for the next next whenever. I got like 5-star treatment there because we're like 3 servers, and I got kind of a sampling of each of them. So definitely cool.
Huh? That's interesting.
Yeah, Columbus has got a solid Waffle House for sure.
Cool. So so we've been talking for a while, so I'm going to leave all this stuff in.
Absolutely.
Because it's well worth it. And we'll backtrack to the and come around to the Nooklyn stuff. But why don't we jump in with kind of how I normally start off, and we'll backtrack into that with so you said Ringgold, Georgia was where you grew up, right?
Yep, Ringgold. Well, there's really a town right next to it called Fort Oglethorpe.
Called what?
Fort Oglethorpe.
Oh, it's Fort. Kind of sorry. It broke up there for a second, and it all ran together. I was like, what?
It's kind of a mouthful, especially when you're in elementary school and in fifth grade and still trying to learn the name of your town, because when you learn how to write and all that. And
Oglethorpe isn't one of those. Oglethorpe, yeah.
It's a strange one. It sounds like a distant race of alien creatures living in some other galaxy, the Oglethorpians. it's a strange one. Not a lot there. Very rural Georgia.
So I lived in Augusta for 4 years, and lived in St. Simon's Island for a year. But where is? Okay. I'm trying to think of where Fort Oglethorpe is.
So Fort Oglethorpe is literally the last town that you will pass through, depending on where you're at. The last town you pass through before hitting Tennessee. So like next to Fort Oglethorpe, there's Rossville, and they both basically border Chattanooga.
Okay.
So that's when I tell people where I grew up, I usually just say Chattanooga because it's easier. And
South like, Chattanooga.
People are more the Georgia portion of Chattanooga. People are more familiar with that. And all my friends lived in Chattanooga, and I spent way more time there than Fort Oglethorpe, because there was nothing to do except there was a battlefield. I guess there was a great battle fought in Fort Oglethorpe, and that's kind of like what it was known for. That's what it was built around, and a Walmart. That's pretty much what we had. But of course, since it was a battlefield, you know, it's inherently like it's haunted. Yeah, it's got to be haunted. Like, you can't have a battlefield haunted.
No.
So that was always really cool to, I mean, like high school, we'd always go out there and hang out and see if we could find any ghosts, or we ourselves would be the ghosts and try to freak anybody else out that we could find. So it's always really fun.
I'm trying to remember my Georgia history. Wasn't like Oglethorpe one of the founders of the state or something like that, or one of the original governors?
And I should know this. I'm going to say probably on that. I'm gonna dive deep into Wikipedia.
I mean, it's only been like 20 years since I've even had to pay attention to that. And
Right. Remember, like growing up in school, we had like five or six Georgia history classes, like from the time I was in fifth grade to my senior year in high school. It's like, you know, there's more states.
Yeah. Yeah.
49 more.
Let's I remember that. So I moved to Augusta my senior year in high school, and I had to take Georgia history as one of the classes, which is normally a freshman class, which is a lot of fun when you're a senior in high school because you think you're way too cool to hang out with the freshmen.
Oh,
even if you don't
course.
Think you're cool, like I didn't. But I just remember them talking about the, you know, stuff like, well, you should have learned most of this in like second grade Georgia history. I'm like, how many Georgia history classes were there?
You just have to like keep leveling up with that stuff. They want you to become like a Georgia ambassador by the time you graduate high school.
Sure.
Just seems like.
Yeah, not everybody can be Newt Gingrich.
Nope.
So to date myself, when I started college, like I started college at Augusta College when it was Augusta College. I think it's Augusta State University or Augusta University something now. Newt Gingrich was still a poli-sci professor and worked in was a state senator. So if that gives you any indication. and he came and did a guest lecture to my poli-sci class that I had to take freshman year of college.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, did you like rub elbows with Newt Gingrich?
He was really nice when he came to the class. I would not have thought that he would end up being like he is now.
Right.
So
well, at least you can say you're in the same room with him at one point.
Yeah.
You
know,
that's.
So I don't remember what he talked about. I just remember that he was there and, you know,
nodded a lot, moved his hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like that. So, you know, kind of getting back on track. When you were growing up, you know, obviously you're a small town. There's not a lot to do there. Were you kind of, you know, just always hanging out by yourself and doing art stuff or?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. I mean, I grew up in a single parent household. Like, it was just my mom and my sister. Mm-hmm. Like, that was just kind of the deal. But she worked third shift, so kind of just ran wild a lot of the times. I mean, even since like fifth grade.
So smoking crack, killing hookers, all that fun stuff. You know, normal like, fifth grade stuff.
The standard stuff. I mean, that's the standard recipe for shaping a graphic designer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like that's you gotta jump those hurdles first. Yeah, it was, you know, a lot of boredom, but like controlled boredom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I drew a lot, but I don't think that there was really anybody there or anyone to tell me like I couldn't do it. So it just became like more of an obsession, and it's kind of crazy because. I mean, like in first grade, I drew a picture of a lighthouse, and it simple lighthouse, and it got accepted into like some county art show, and I got like a third place ribbon on it, and at the time, just like I didn't really think anything of it, but like thinking back, I'm like, man, that probably like kind of solidified my future career path. I'm like, okay, I got a medal for something that I did. I should probably keep doing that thing.
Sure.
So I did. I kept doing it. It got me in trouble a little bit in elementary school. I drew some, we'll say unsavory subject matter that got a couple of phone calls from the principal. But I still have some of the things that I drew, and I just kind of roll my eyes. I'm like, why did they even make a fuss out of this?
You know, so let's see. You're in fifth grade. You probably drew pictures of poop at some point because.
Yeah, poop. There was definitely poop. There were motorcycle guys with like mohawks.
Oh, no. How horrible.
There were some curses involved and. Whatever. But the thing that was the funniest, I think, about all of this is that there was a competition for drawing the cover of the fifth grade yearbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I submitted one just because just one of those kids who would like try to get done with my work as quickly as possible so I could draw and just stare at a wall or something. Mm-hmm. So I drew one and we submitted them and I didn't put my name on it and it, it won. And then they like showed it on the school announcements and they're like, if anybody has like whoever submitted this, like just, you know, submit your name or like tell your teachers so we can offer proper credit. I raised my hand and it's almost like hearing this collective disappointed sigh, like throughout the school, just like, oh, that kid. But I spelled the school name wrong in on the cover. So they had to like go through and fix it. So yeah, I think that that was like my first published graphic design thing, if you want to consider it.
There you go. Yeah. Getting an early start and still not getting paid.
Right, yeah. I think I got a free yearbook that I like lost immediately.
This is generally the way it works.
Exactly. Still happens to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll give you a free copy.
Yeah. Oh, God. If I had samples of half the stuff that I've done, I would have a much better looking portfolio than I do. Actually, no, not really, because I did a lot of just crappy stuff. Not like intentionally I was a crappy designer, just the work itself was not awe-inspiring that you want to show.
Right.
Which I always think is the hilarious part about portfolios, because it's not realistic of what you're really doing most of the time. It's like so cherry-picked of everything.
It is. And, you know, it's not like you're drawing or speaking from your heart. It's usually like there's a brief, there's a client, there's something else.
Yeah.
It's not the good stuff.
No.
Yeah.
It's always funny. So you get through elementary school relatively unscathed and only called into the principal's office a few times for drawings and, you know, getting an early start with graphic design. Do you kind of continue on the art path through high school, or do you drift away from it for a little bit like a lot of people do?
I think I kind of solidified that from an early age. I mean, through middle school was kind of a blur, but definitely high school. And I think that was sort of a very formative time as far as the artistic portion of my life, because
sure.
I had like my high school art teacher. I know it's sort of like cliche to say like, oh, my, you know, high school art teacher really brought it out of me. But she absolutely did.
Mine did not.
She absolutely did.
So there, I've counterbalanced it. I mean, I liked her, but you know, it was, yeah.
Right. I mean, they all have like the best intentions, yeah. But this one, she was cool. And I weighed on her for a little bit because I was a little bit of a hellraiser in mm-hmm. high school because of the, you know, aforementioned mother working third shift. So I just, you know, did whatever. But
a lot of raising yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that was kind of important. I mean, my sister definitely helped out, but I kind of had to like learn by example, like, oh, okay, my other friends are doing this. I should probably do that too. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't help when your other friends also have parents who work third shift.
So a little bit of Lord of the Flies starts happening at some point.
Yeah, no, it really is. It's a book hits close to home. But like in high school, like I took took art classes and, you know, really liked it because it's like something that I got in trouble for in other classes mm-hmm. was appreciated in art class. So I kept doing that until I took all of the art classes that you could take. I mean, I did ceramics, I did sculpture, I did painting, I did drawing, I did intro to art, I did art history, as much mm-hmm. as I could. And by my senior year, I couldn't take any more of those. So I was enrolled in ROTC, which was not by my choice. It just sort of happened. They put me in there because there was no.
You have to have an elective. Here's the one you're taking.
Yeah, and they forced it on me. And, you know, I'm sure all schools kind of have their own ROTC stories. And I was friends with a lot of the ROTC kids mm-hmm. leading up to my senior year. So, like, you know, I didn't think anything badly of them.
except for, like, they had to wear their uniforms every Wednesday, and they were, like, green uniforms, and everybody called them pickles, and it was ha-ha hilarious, high school, we're immature. Here come the pickles.
I've never heard that one.
the pickles, yeah. And I, at the time, was mortified of becoming a pickle. I so badly did not want to be one. And
I was, like, punk rock or whatever. I mean, like, the studded belt, red hair, girl jeans, all that crap. You know, you're figuring yourself out in high school, I think. So, like, I was in ROTC the first day, and they were fitting us for uniforms. They wasted no time. And I won't get into too many details because I don't want to offend any listeners, but a friend of mine.
Away.
Okay. All right. So
you can say whatever you want on here.
Oh, I hope you don't regret that. So
I haven't yet.
Well, you did have Draplin on here, so
yeah, he was actually relatively tame when he was on here for him. So
interesting.
Yeah,
being a good boy. So, and when they're fitting us for uniforms, they said guys on one side, girls on the other side. And another one of my buddies who was sort of wrangled into this was next to me, and he's kind of dorky, and he was, of course, like, making comments about all the girls across the way, and I'm just kind of, like, rolling my eyes, like, okay, Matt, cool, man. And I guess one of the girls caught wind of something that he was saying, but it... And because we were both together and, you know, he was kind of like laughing, we got called to the assistant principal's office, and she threatened, because my friend, he automatically was just like, I didn't say anything. I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't say anything. And we both knew what he said. And it was very inappropriate to a female in the class and, you know, whatever. So we're sitting there and she's like, you know, we're going to have to, if neither one of you, like, admit to this, then both of you are going to be removed from the class.
And that's motivation not to do it.
Exactly. Well, I, it was like I was on autopilot. I immediately accepted responsibility for doing it, even though I did not do it. And, like, I knew the girl that, he said the thing to, and they kicked me out of the class, and there weren't any other classes for me to take. So my art teacher made up a class for me, which was like, I think it was like ceramics 4, and I took that, and in ceramics 4, I really, like, I basically just, like, crashed on her couch and drew and painted that whole block. And I think it was that thing, like, that little incident that really sort of launched me into this, like, art life, because from then I, like, started taking classes at the local museum. She started, like, really, like, displaying my work throughout the school, and it was, at that point, it was obvious, like, that's what I needed to do. That's what I felt good doing. That's what I was happy doing. And yeah.
So she saves you from being a pickle and then solidifies your career in the arts. So when you get out of high school, do you end up going to college or do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So interestingly enough, though, as comfortable and confident as I was in this new sort of life in art, I actually wanted to be a chef. Like, I wanted to do food, and I did my senior project in high school on food presentation and garnish.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't even, yeah, which to this day, I still don't
know. That's very specific.
I don't know what compelled me to pick that. I have no idea. But, like, that was the thing. Like, I think it was, like, sort of the combination of food, something that's very, it's temporary, it's very impermanent, and, like, dressing it up and making it look as good as possible. There was something, I guess, to me at the time, very intriguing about that. So I enrolled into the Art Institute of Atlanta in culinary arts.
Oh, wow.
foot, never went to any classes.
Well, that's a waste of money.
Well, so the way that it worked out, and I was enrolled, and like the classes started like a month or something from when I enrolled because it was late, and I had to like backtrack, and there was this whole like refund process because I never attended any classes, and it was a mess. It was an absolute mess. So I ended up going to Kennesaw State University because a couple of my friends were going there at the time, and I knew that I didn't want to stay in Chattanooga just because I'd been there all my life, and I wanted to move to Atlanta, and that was pretty much the closest place that I could find. I mean, I wanted to go to Kennesaw. I had a friend that was in the arts program there, and he said it was pretty good. So I went there thinking that I was going to, do art, and I was going to maybe be like a graphic novel person. Like I was going to draw like some cool graphic novel figures and get into that and like get into like narrative art. I learned very quickly that that was extremely time consuming, and I had
sequential art is
The people who do that, my hat's off to them. That is one of like the most impressive skills I think in the art world, like being able to do cartoons and just repeatedly like drawing like sort of the same things but with subtle differences. I can't wrap my head around it.
Yeah, I can't do it either. I look at it and it doesn't seem like it would be as difficult when you just look at it until you try to actually do it. And
yeah, right. And then it's painstaking. Yeah. So it definitely takes.
I'm good at drawing the same thing once.
Yeah, and then looking at it and kind of shaking your head and then drawing another thing that's completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my life. So I think I ended up just taking graphic design. It was an intro to typography just because I needed to fill an art credit.
Sure.
And because I was taking like painting and drawing classes and ceramics and all that stuff. And really fell in love with it sort of immediately. There was one project in particular that really like turned the tides. And my design professor in school was a hard ass, and that's putting it lightly. Like people would come crying from her classroom.
Oh no.
She did not put things lightly. She was very honest. She was brutal. She was actually, her mentor was Milton Glaser.
Oh, which, wow. Yeah. Yeah. He's known for being such a sweet, kind old man.
Yeah, she definitely, but the thing is like I loved it because I think everything up until that point, like art teachers, I feel are, you know, they're trying to hone your skill and polish your skill and turn it into something that's, you know, very fine-tuned, but they're nice, you know, because
yeah, they always want to encourage you and
yeah, and that's a strategy. Like you should do that. Like that makes you feel like what you're doing is good. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to walk into an art class and have no warmth from your professor and all they do is put you down. But at the same time, there is nothing more effective than that, because if someone says you do a bad job, you can do one of two things. You can just put your mouse down and walk out and say, I'm never doing that again. Or you can do the other thing, which is, oh, well, I'll prove her wrong because I know I'm more than that. And I think it's that decision that really, you know, even like in the professional world, like that's a thing that really sets the two parties apart. Like, you know, one type of person is just going to be hellbent on proving someone else wrong or like proving their own worth. Mm-hmm. And someone else is just going to like drop their tools and walk away from it.
Sure. Well, and it's rare to find a boss in the professional world who's going to pat you on the back every 5 seconds and tell you what a great job you're doing.
Right. So. Right. And even if you did have that, like that's not going to bring out the best in you.
No,
it's not
going to
get out your best work at all, because you always feel that you're satisfying the whatever quota they set forth. So, you know, why do any more?
Yeah.
I love that honest truth. I really do.
I give people feedback sometimes on their projects and their work, and like sometimes I have to backtrack because I realize like what I type out and what I write is like very blunt.
Mm-hmm.
And like if I read it back, I'm like, oh my gosh, like
it's one of those brutal things that if you said it out loud, it wouldn't seem quite as blunt, but if you're typing it out, it seems that much harder.
Yeah. Man, it's like it's text tone, and that's like the trouble with technology, I feel. Like you can write something out and mean one thing, but it's interpreted as something completely differently. And that can ruin relationships. That can piss people off. Mm-hmm. That can people can take things the wrong way. It's almost like I wish Apple or someone would develop like
sarcasm font.
Exactly, like sarcasm font. Like maybe it's italic but a little wiggly.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, reverse italics.
That's a good idea. Reversed italics, there we go.
Huh, I might have to look into that.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. But like, yeah, having a brutal professor definitely made it worth it. There was one project that I did, and there I vividly remember two people just like stopping during their presentation and walking out of the room because my professor wouldn't let them finish. And I got up there and started talking about mine, and she had these things called corner office awards. So she would, this is like how much she encouraged competition. Each project, she'd be like, okay, this person has the corner office because they did the best project.
Or
this
other person. Okay. I was trying to figure out. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
It made no sense to me until like halfway through the semester. I'm like, what is a corner office award? Is there like a corner office we can hang out in the building? Like, what is that? That's cool. Does tuition pay for that? She pretty much damned everybody, and she gave me the corner office award, but she didn't do it very subtly. She did it very like overtly and right out there. And I mean, it felt,
hey,
good,
Daniel's better than the rest of you assholes.
I just shrank. I just turned into a puddle in my chair. And like, you know, like Secret World of Alec Mack.
Yeah. Yeah.
The old, I turned into a pile of mercury and I just slid out.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God, they all hate me now. Yeah. Yeah, I had a drawing professor who was very much like that. I never got the kudos. I got the other end of the stick. And she's this little tiny old Japanese woman who had so much attitude. I mean, like, her attitude, you would have thought she was like a 6'8", 300-pound NFL player who just, you know, would run through a bus. But she was maybe 4'11" with heels.
Right, she's like a Pomeranian. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
Like tiny dogs think they're the size of elephants.
But she, I mean, she'd get on there. Who taught you to draw? This is horrible. This sucks. And she'd always get so upset because, like, I'd had her for almost all of my drawing classes, and I'd be like, "You did? No, that can't be the case." And she was old enough, she never remembered anybody from, like, class to class, semester to semester.
Oh, no, you're just, like, introducing yourself, like, again and again and again. It's like, no, it's me, it's Jason.
Yeah, I was here last semester, remember?
we're cool. Remember you screamed at me? Uh-huh. You threw the vase of flowers at me?
Yeah. Yeah. Thankfully, she never threw anything, but she did yell at people and just, like, cut you to the quick every time. And but she would, I mean, if you did something right, she would point it out too. So yeah, it was like, you need to work on that. It was always, you know, followed by, now the rest of this sucks, but that's good. Keep with that. This sucks. That's like, okay, a nice elbow.
There's a little positive encouragement. Yeah. I'll go off that.
I generally, the encouragement I always got revolved around, like elbows or shoulders or knees. Cause I tend to have an angular style when I draw. So
okay.
She just, for some reason, she liked that.
So the thing just coming up behind you, resting a hand on your shoulder and just nodding gently, like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what I was looking for. The perfect shoulder.
Yep. So you get this hard ass who kind of shapes you and, you know, shows you through criticism how to do good stuff and build things up.
Right, and I think that's kind of all I needed, because then, you know, I graduated with a, you know, design degree, and I actually had a job before I graduated. I was working for an SEO company.
Oh, okay.
Which I won't name the, I will not say the name of. It was cool. It was great. I mean, they, I definitely learned a lot there. But like my boss, the guy who ran the company, was like one of those life coachy type people.
Tony Robbins.
Like, yeah. It was exactly like, I mean, he was like an amateur Tony Robbins, and like companies would pay him to come in, and like he had had a successful like kettlebell company. And
I'm sorry, did you say cowbell?
Kettlebell. Yeah.
I'm thinking so, cowbell like Will Ferrell in Saturday Night Live.
We should have just left it at that. Yeah, so the guy just really was a good salesman of cowbells.
I mean, not that just having a kettlebell company isn't in its own right odd. But
it was very odd. And like I would do like all sorts of like ebooks for him, but the SEO company basically only served like these elite dentists. And I say elite because that's what they refer to themselves as. So it's like these high profile.
Nothing like the ego of a dentist.
Blew my mind. Yeah. Like I didn't know that existed, but there are these dentists out there. I mean, I guess they're in every profession, but there are these people like they only do cosmetic dentistry, but for like high profile clients, you know, like celebrities and like politicians and whatnot.
I whiten Kanye's teeth twice a week. Okay, that's good for you. Is that impressive? Like
I like Kanye. I like his teeth. I should probably choose that dentist.
Yeah.
So I would basically what we would do is like get WordPress templates or themes and then like customize those. And I would spend every day looking at like before and after photos of people's teeth.
Mm-hmm. Just what you want to see.
I grew me into it now. Like it really like desensitized me, I think, towards like all teeth and really just bodily abnormalities in general, because I was exposed to some pretty weird and disturbing stuff.
I can imagine.
It's like looking at those images at 300 DPI, 5,000 pixels wide in Photoshop. You really humans start looking like inhuman, like creatures, like
yeah.
you kind of understand like how we boiled up from like the old water pits of ancient Earth. Like it makes sense.
Yeah.
Looking at people's teeth like that. But yeah, like I learned a lot because I worked with the head designer there, and he sort of showed me the ropes with like WordPress and how to customize themes, and taught me a little bit about PHP. And at the time, I was just kind of like annoyed because I'm like, I want to be a designer. I want to do visual design. I want to do like, you know, cool looking sites and gig posters and stuff like that. And like, you're teaching me code. But at the time, I didn't realize that he was teaching me probably some of the most valuable information that I would ever get in being and like working in the web. Because he was showing me like parameters and showing me things I couldn't do and show me like, you know, okay, you design a web page this way, but this is why you can't code it. But here's a way that you can do it, and you can code it, and people can see it on different browsers, and, you know, yada yada. So that started to make a lot of sense, and I really got heavily into like front-end development and, like, getting into JavaScript and PHP and, you know, all the other codes out there that make up the web. It became very interesting to me because it was the funny thing is because it was very frustrating, and there is no satisfaction greater than battling with a problem for 12 hours straight on a website, not getting like a div to be where you want it to be, and then all of a sudden realizing like, oh, this line of code goes here, and then everything sort of falls into place. It's magical. And I think it was that feeling like, okay, I'm going to be a front-end developer. Like, that's it. Like, I've written my path. So sort of fell out of design for a little bit and fell into, like, developing WordPress themes, which was, I had no idea what I was doing. And for my clients out there,
I apologize so much for like the themes that and like the websites that I did, because they were bloated so much with code because I had no idea what I was doing. But like, you have to do that.
So yeah, you gotta learn the wrong way to do it to learn the right way to do it.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, you're not gonna hit it right off. So from there, I went to an antique valuation website doing.
It's very another very specific realm.
Yeah, it was at the time. It was like, you're like going to a lot of like antique malls and antique stores and stuff, and just like building up my apartment with crap that I didn't need, like old test tubes and skulls and keychains and stuff that I'll. It's just decorative.
Like, yeah.
All that stuff in antique malls, like, you're not going to find any use for it. Like, you're not going to buy an old microscope from 1945 and one Friday night be like, you know what? I want to see what cat hair really looks like.
Nope. But you'll pay $400 for it at an antique mall.
You absolutely will. Absolutely.
And it's worth about three.
Exactly. So this was the website. So the website was called WorthPoint. And basically it... So say you have a Ninja Turtles lunchbox from your childhood, like, you know, say it's late 80s, early 90s, whatever, and you've had it for all your life, and you keep things in it, and you keep it around, but you don't really know why, but you want to know how much it's worth. You can go on the site and plug in the specifics of the lunchbox. And then you can find sales records of how much that lunchbox has been sold for over the years. So you can really like pinpoint the value of it. And that's what I did. Like I worked for that company for a while.
I'm not about to go and look to see how much my Empire Strikes Back lunchbox was worth.
You might be sitting on a small fortune though.
Oh, that I don't have it anymore. I'm just saying, I wish I had it.
That could be a yacht. You never
know. Yeah, no, I look back at all the things that I used to have that I, you know, got just sold in yard sales for like pennies. And I'm like, oh, my God, right. I had so many original Star Wars figures and stuff like that. Now, granted, all of them were missing the lightsabers because, you know, as a kid, I had to chew them.
Of course.
But I had and my mom just got rid of it, but it was missing tons of stuff. But I had a original Millennium Falcon. So, yeah.
Those things are sending kids to college.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My comic collection alone could have put me through college, paid off my debt, put my kids through college, and probably my grandkids through college. But I got rid of all of the stuff in, like, yard sales. Like, I had number one issues of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, back when it was black and white and they weren't really mutants, they were aliens.
Right.
Yeah, and I had, you know, the original first run of the Transformers comics and stuff like that.
Oh, man. You just have to put that stuff out of your mind or else it keeps you up at night.
So I will say, I just discovered, going through the attic, I have a first run of the first issue of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Hey, so...
Which apparently is still not worth that much, unfortunately. I was really hoping after the movie came out, it would be worth just a ton. No, it's still only worth about $5.
Well, you know, give it another 30 years and I could be retirement. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to hang on to all the stuff now. So
there you go. Hoard. Basically, moral of the story, hoard.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had space to do it, I probably would end up one of those people. So you get out of the antiquing business. What do you do then?
So I kind of jumped around for a little bit. I worked at an ad agency for a little while. Worked with, like, at the ad agency, I worked for, like, Verizon and UPS. Did some illustration stuff for UPS. Did mostly email templates with Verizon. Mm-hmm. It was cool. Then I worked for a minute at another company that was basically creating, like, it was like an email marketing website. I did UI design there and then illustration whenever I could. Mm-hmm. Even though they had like graphic designers on staff and they had people there to do that, I was just the UI guy. But
I was hell bent on also doing the icons because I wanted to do it all.
Sure.
And I was there for maybe like 6 months. My whole team basically dissolved in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like last man standing. So I'm like, I'm just going to go out the back door, see you guys. It didn't happen like that, but it was very quick.
Uh-huh.
But from there, I went to Yik Yak. The product designer at the time there, Joe, he made like a post on Dribbble that was like, you know, Yik Yak looking for a brand designer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a cool image, so I liked it. And he sent me a message. Like, that's all I did. I just liked it. And he sent me a message, you know, like a few hours later. And he's like, hey, man, you know, like, look at your work. Like, what would you think about, you know, working for us? You know, here's the position. Here's some details. And it was right around in that time in my life when I just started saying yes to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it didn't matter what it was. I just nodded my head and agreed and kind of let the universe pull me through life. which
I think my buddy Zach owes you a great deal of gratitude for that one.
yes he does. Yes he does. Oh, Zach.
He'll just be excited that he got mentioned in here.
God. That's my boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just like once you just kind of like surrender like your like all of the reservations you have towards things, stop kind of just going against the grain of life. I really think there's some gold in that. Like if you stop resisting, mm-hmm. things just move how they're supposed to move, you know, kind of like waves on a shore. Like you're not gonna, if you dam them up, they're gonna stop, you know. Don't dam them up, let them just wash up the sand. To use sort of a weird analogy.
Yeah. So with you coming back onto Yik Yak, was that kind of you moving a little bit away from doing the UI UX stuff?
Definitely.
Back into design? Because, I mean, if you go look on your Dribbble page, like, I would think that you only did illustration for the most part, unless I really, really scrolled down.
It's, and that's pretty much like what I project. Like, that's, and I'm like, I probably do like half UI, half illustration, but for whatever reason, I just like throw that illustration stuff into the wild and kind of,
that's more what you have fun doing.
And
the other part's what pays the bills.
Exactly. Yep.
Yep.
So it Yik Yak, it was like this really cool opportunity. It's like, okay, well, we just need a brand designer, which for their purposes basically meant illustration. And, like I worked on a lot of really cool things there. Like I know the first week I was there, cause they had all these like awesome projects they had been thinking of for months, but they didn't have anybody there to do them.
Mm-hmm.
So the first week was basically just like meeting after meeting after meeting, hearing everybody out, forming a project queue, and then just trying to act on that. So out of that first week, like I ended up, redesigning an ice cream truck.
Mm-hmm.
They did like a, cause they'd go around to like different campuses and they needed a truck to hand out all the swag. So I designed like an ice cream truck, a snowboard, like some bandanas, just stuff that I never worked on before, but things that I always wanted to. And mm-hmm. it was all in the same month.
I think I tried to win that snowboard.
Dude, I tried to like walk around the office and at one point, and it became immediately apparent that I was not cut out for really any sport at that point.
Hey, I'm the same.
Could not do it.
I just remember when that came out was, I guess it's been probably about a year and a half since that snowboard was out. It was right before, the Montoose, the Epicurrence mini thing was going on with Dan Petty, and I was trying to win it because I was going to that, and I was like, well, I've never been snowboarding before, so this would be a good way to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing you didn't win it, because it was, there are, I guess, promo snowboards.
Oh, so it's purely decorative?
Yeah.
you can't, if you take to the Alps on that thing, you are going to face plant in the snow, which I had no idea. I just thought a snowboard was a snowboard.
Well, I face planted in the snow anyway, so I don't think it probably would have made a difference.
Yeah, did not provide that much cushion. But yeah, Yik Yak really like offered me like a lot of, God, there were just like so many different crazy things that I worked on there. Like did visuals for like a DJ set. They had a DJ like going around doing stuff for like spring break, mm-hmm. and just crazy off the wall stuff. I never really would have thought that I would do. I got to work with MTV at one point, which was
awesome.
Kind of neat during like the VMAs, and had to make like a bunch of Miley Cyrus illustration things.
I'm sorry.
Kind of. They were cringy at the time. I'm like, I don't want to do this. But then after I did it, I'm like, oh, I guess that was kind of cool. That was fun.
And this is the literal amount I know of Miley Cyrus. There were wrecking balls and tongues. I'm going to assume that was a big theme of it.
Wrecking balls, tongues, and then cherries, because somebody recommended cherries. That's all, which is, they're actually just smaller wrecking balls.
Yeah, I don't even want to know where that's going.
Me either. I can't dwell on it. Can't dwell on it. But Yik Yak was definitely like that thing where I kind of found my rhythm and found my pace and like, okay, like I really want to be doing branding work and I really want to be doing illustration. Like that's the thing I get a lot of pleasure out of. And at the time, I mean, I was doing freelance just because I gave up sleep for another lifetime. Just freelance, full time, whatever. I just constantly need to be like pumping things out. So Nooklyn had offered me a full time gig back in January, which required me to move up to Brooklyn. And it was a hard decision because all I've ever really known is the South, and I've been in Atlanta for such a long time and, you know, formed so many great relationships here, and like, this is where I live, this is my happy, this is my place. But at the same time, it's like there's such an enormous planet out there to explore and to exist in, that, you know, why not? And Nooklyn is such a great company, and like I really believe in the product, and I really you know, believe in the people there, and I think it's an awesome company. So, you know, I agreed to do it. So
sure. Well, and you said earlier, you know, you've been doing stuff with them for 3 years, so you've gotten an idea of how they work and how you're going to fit in. So that's got to make it a little more comforting.
It definitely is, and that brand has shifted so much, and it's another one of those positions where, you know, at Yik Yak, I'm, you know, doing icons one day, web layout another day, you know, doing mural stuff the next. It's just, it's all over the place, and Nooklyn is very much an extension of that. I mean, it's like, it's everything. So I can constantly like kind of be nimble and go back and forth between different, like both digital and physical environments and print and web work. So it's kind of nice in that regard. And, it just allows me, I guess, to do a lot of the things that I couldn't do otherwise, unless it was on a freelance, basis.
Sure.
Which I still do to this day. I actually officially stopped doing freelance for this month because of the move and all that. But
I can't imagine why you would need to have some time for yourself this month.
Yeah, must just want to get like 1 hour of sleep a night.
Well, and if you want to remain engaged and possibly get married in the future, you probably should help your fiance out, who is tiptoeing behind you.
Yeah, probably need to do that. Does she have a knife? She might.
She's looking over at you right now, like, what?
Her ears are burning. So, yeah, I mean, like, the occasional thing will come along where it's one of those opportunities where I just have intense FOMO about and can't say no to. There was a recent project, actually, that came up that it had like a super tight deadline, and they only had like a week, and it was like the largest project with the shortest timeline that's ever hit my email inbox. And
my gut reaction was like, no, that's ridiculous. Like, you can't do that, because I was going out of town the next weekend. And I'm like, if there were any revisions or anything like that, I just wouldn't be able to do them. It just, it'd be impossible. Mm. So I was going to be, you know, driving up to New York, and it wasn't happening.
Gotcha.
So I did some sketches and stuff for it, and like, I didn't hear anything back, and the days are kind of counting down. And it's hitting that deadline when I'm supposed to have essentially 16 big illustrations done. And I have like 3 days at this point to do it. And I'm getting super worried. I'm like, I can't do this. Like, even if I stay up and don't sleep at all, I cannot do this. It's impossible. And finally, when there's like 2 days remaining, they're like, okay, you know, sorry, there's some issues on the client side, yada, yada. Can you have them by next Monday?
So they bought you some more time.
They bought me more time, but in like the worst way possible, because I was going out of town from Thursday to Sunday.
Oh no.
But I'd already committed to the contract or the project, and we had a contract, and like, you know, I had to do them, and it was a fun project, and I wanted to do them, but I wanted to put in the time that they needed. So I could have done one of two things. I could have politely told them that it was impossible, apologized profusely, and just kind of wiped my hands of it and then felt ashamed of myself, or told them that 1 week is fine, it's more than enough time, and do them anyways. I chose the latter and ended up doing most of that work in the backseat of a car, traveling up to New York. Which was great. I had a pretty good setup back there. I mean, I found a pretty comfy position sitting in the back seat with my laptop and all that. So I had a constantly changing environment, so none of that got boring.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. And I think that actually helped me do better work, because it put me in this uncomfortable position. One, a clock constantly ticking down, and two
is a great motivator.
definitely a great motivator, and it's my favorite. Like, I love having deadlines. I love having that pressure. I think that it can knock the best work out of anybody. You know, if you're given 2 hours to do something, 3 hours to do something, or, you know, the world's going to end, you're going to pump out some good stuff.
Like, well, you're going to panic for the first 2 hours and then work on it in the last hour.
Exactly, as we all do.
Yes.
I kind of have like a long track record of agreeing to do things that I know that I shouldn't do, and I know that aren't practical to do, but...
You hear that, Zach?
Yeah. Those patterns are coming for you, buddy. Don't worry. I owe him patterns. I think once you like come face to face with your discomfort zone, and you really realize what your limitations are, and you try to push those, you know, I think interesting things can happen. You know, you can either cave, or you can just sally forth and kind of put your head down and get the work done. And pressure definitely does that. And at this point now in my career, it's just kind of, it's hilarious. Like, anytime I accept to do a job, I just know something's going to go wrong. Like,
sure.
There's going to be a family emergency. There's going to be a move, like someone needs me to help out with a project or something, and I'm going to have to do it. Which is good. I mean, that added stress is nice.
Well, maybe not somehow. The added stress of it, the added motivation.
Exactly. The motivation that comes from the stress.
Yeah, sure. There you go.
You can only have so much gray hair.
So, you know, speaking of the added stress, and we kind of touched on this earlier, and you just talked about it a little bit, is you're in Atlanta now, and you're having to, by the end of the month, pack everything up, including the at least two cats that I see running around behind you. Three cats. Oh.
Three cats.
Well, at least there's two of you, so it's only one and a half per person, so you're not crazy cat people yet.
Very true, but we had that fourth on. We qualify.
Yeah, exactly. So you're packing everything up and moving to Brooklyn for Nooklyn.
Yeah.
Right, right.
I've been wanting to say that for like an hour now.
It never gets old. Yeah. Trust me, it never gets old.
Are you shitting your pants yet, or are you gonna wait till the last minute on that one for packing and all too?
Daily on the shitting the pants. It's becoming like a very real reality. We finally like signed a lease on a place last week, which is awesome. We had, I mean, working for Nooklyn is great because one of the agents there helped us out so much. I mean, showed us like 12 apartments in one day and showed us another one the next day and just was awesome about it. But we signed a lease. We'll be living in, I guess it's an old converted bodega. Mm-hmm. So they like took a bodega, turned into an apartment, which is cool because right now we live in an old high school. So we actually live in an old classroom.
Sense on the windows behind you.
Yeah. It's like the old style, like classroomy kind of vibe. It has like one of the cases where they used to put like the old science equipment and still has like the drain in it.
Huh.
It's cool. It's definitely a unique space. We've just been basically living in like old conversions. So if we're lucky, like after Brooklyn, hopefully we can like score an old Arby's. We can live in. If we're extra lucky, hopefully it'll still smell like it.
I don't know if that would be extra lucky.
Waking up to the smell of roast beef.
Yeah. Going to take a shower one day and you find out the old grease trap is still full. That wouldn't be fun.
Oh no! Oh, the images. It's definitely been a stressful process, but I think that working at Oakland has definitely trimmed out a lot of the stress. I do realize that like we have to get rid of so much stuff because moving up the country is just it's going to be insane. Mm-hmm. Just like packing one truck, knowing we can't make multiple trips. I realized I had to sell my car, which is something I thought would be a lot easier than it has been. I don't know if you've ever sold a car before, but it is impossible.
I have, but I didn't have bad luck with it. So I got rid of mine in like 2 weeks. So
I am struggling. We're going to have like a chat offline. I'll have to get some car selling
park it at the edge of like a grocery store overnight and on the weekends with a big for sale sign on it. That's what worked for
me. Hey, that gives me another design project, so that's good.
There you go.
We'll be the most.
I didn't even go fancy. I just went with the stop by Home Depot, get the orange and black for sale sign, and threw one up in the front window, threw one up in the back window, and
it's probably what I'm gonna have to do. Because I've got maybe 3 weeks to do it, so that's gonna be a bummer. I love that car too. It's gonna be sad to part with, but got to do it.
If I had the money and I could fit two 7-year-olds in it and a wife and still have room for other stuff, I would take it off your hands.
It's cramped. It is even for like just me in it. It's super cramped, but whatever. It is what it is. I've always just driven like these really tiny cars for whatever reason. I don't know why. Just happens. I think I just want something as close to a go-kart as possible.
There you go.
Kind of drift around the streets with.
Well, look at it this way. You won't have a car payment now.
That is.
You don't have to worry about one. Or
it's
car
the
insurance.
Light at the end of the tunnel. Definitely the light at the end of the tunnel. And that's just going to give me like more money to, throw at student loans all that.
Well, so. No, you're in Brooklyn. It's going to go towards your rent.
Yeah. It'll go towards like our cat food and all that stuff. It's going to be expensive. Just have to come to terms with that. So yeah, definitely big changes on the horizon for sure.
Gotcha.
Without a doubt. But I think that we're going to fit in pretty well. My fiance is very much into she's an actress and she does video production. And I think that, New York's going to be kind of like the perfect place for her to sort of explore those things a little more.
Yeah. Not that Atlanta has a bad art scene, but for that type, specifically like theater stuff, New York's a better environment for that. Also, a lot more competition, but you got a better community that you can hang out with. So
that's true. That's absolutely true. And you know, I think that, you know, we'll kind of find our footing. It's like, we're great big introverts anyways. So it's not like we're going to be out on the town every night at the bars or anything like that. So,
yeah.
You know, we'll probably be spending a lot of time in the apartment and, you know, not like being too crazy, which is kind of weird to say considering we're moving to New York, where people seem to be a lot more energetic and like go, go, go.
It's definitely a faster pace of life.
Just, it's not our style. I move at the speed of, it's like if a turtle and a sloth produced an offspring, it would resemble something closely to me, I think.
And then took some Xanax on top of that?
It took Xanax and then just had like a cup of coffee poured over its head. I think that's a pretty accurate depiction of what I am. Very sedentary.
You'll adapt.
I think so. I mean, it's going to be a lot of biking, but, you know.
Cool.
It'll happen. So, yeah, it'll be fun. Definitely looking forward to that huge change.
Awesome. Well, good luck with the move. And, you know, kind of wrapping up here, where can people find you online?
Yeah, so online, definitely the old Dribble. I think I keep changing my names up all the time. Okay, / Daniel Hare. I don't know if it was heresy or not, because, like, that's my online.
Yeah, like Twitter and all that stuff.
Yeah, Twitter, Instagram, it's just heresy. Probably LinkedIn as well, but my LinkedIn profile is kind of a joke, so.
Isn't everyone in our industries?
I'd like to think so. I mean, my official job title on LinkedIn is that I am a shape warlock.
Yes, I saw that.
I still get recruiters sending me messages. Like, did you do a... Okay, whatever.
The recruiters are out hot and heavy lately looking for insurance salespeople, because I've been just getting tons of those.
Really?
Oh, so many of them. I'm like, what about my profile makes you think that would be something I would even be remotely interested in doing?
It makes you scratch your head. It definitely makes you scratch your head. I get back-end development inquiries all the time. I'm like, there's nowhere on my profile that has anything to do with back-end development.
They just see the one word developer, if you've probably got front-end development in there somewhere. And they pick up on it.
It's all the same.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No. Very different.
Very different.
Very light code, very heavy intensive code.
Yeah, definitely two different personalities for sure.
Yeah. So Dribble is Daniel Hare. The rest of the stuff is Heresy. That's with an E in the, well, because spelled completely different than you would actually spell Heresy.
Yeah, spelled very wrongly. HAIRESSY. So that's Instagram, Twitter, and all the good stuff. So yeah, that's and I'm working on a new shop. I've been sitting on T-shirts and pins for the past 4 months that I'll eventually have up in a shop somewhere.
So you literally have the physical products with you, and they're just sitting there.
I'm so ashamed of myself. Yeah, So it's like when you get pins, it's like, okay, you also have to have backing cards, and you also have to have some clever distribution model, and you have to there's so many other things to have and to figure out, like logistics. Other than just having the actual physical product, which I am awful at. I can barely answer an email, rather put something in an envelope and mail it off.
So I'm bad at stamps.com.
Stamps.com is where I will be going.
And if they would like to sponsor us.
Stamps.com, if you're listening, Creative South Podcast, use a sponsor. I'll get my shit together and I'll have some things on my site by the end of the year. So hopefully, keep an eye out for that.
Awesome. Well, let us know when you do, and we'll post some links to that for you. In the meantime, we end every podcast by saying go out and hug some necks, which you've been to Creative South, so you know kind of what that means. Would you would you mind taking us out?
Absolutely. Yeah. Go out and hug some necks.
All right. Thanks, Daniel. I appreciate it very much.
All right, thanks, Jason.
You can find out more about Daniel on Twitter and Instagram at Heresy. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and our new Facebook page at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA, or over at creativesouthga.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit cityluck.xyz to buy a 3-pack that you can send to your friends, enemies, or try to collect all the fortunes yourself. And while you're there, pick up one of the City Luck Cat enamel pins and our promo code FAMILY to get 30% off your first order. Always weird, but never mean-spirited. City Luck Fortune Cookies. Don't forget to head over to creativesouthga.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.